Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
And that's our biggest thing that we've done in our recruiting is like, I mean, if there's any questions about the kid that he doesn't compete, he doesn't love ball, like we'll stop recruiting him.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we're joined by Tim Kaine, assistant coach at Murray State. This is an excerpt from one of our Zoom sessions with our Rising Coaches members group from April 20th. Tim joins us, and we have a great conversation about his journey through the profession, how he started as a soccer player, and some of his breaks that got him into the coaching industry, and then some of the challenges of the Murray State job, the expectations that come along with it, the high level of recruiting that you have to be able to maintain year in and year out, and how they really change the culture and flip the program after 2 years during Coach McMahon's era there. Really good stuff from Tim. We hope you enjoy. Please subscribe to the podcast, write us a review, and please follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com. Okay, before we jump into today's podcast, I want to talk to you briefly about the Rising Coaches membership. You know, so many people ask, what is it? What do you get? Will this help me get a job? That's the million-dollar question. A lot of times people hit us up when they need job advice and asking for help. And look, we're happy to give advice and help anytime we can, whether you're a member or not. And we can't guarantee that signing up for a membership is going to get you a job. We don't want to get into that. But what we can guarantee is if you do sign up, there's some tremendous content on our member site. And we are constantly bringing in new coaches and guests to speak to our group. So we really feel strongly that it'll help you with your development. If you want to meet coaches in the profession from all different levels, which I always strongly advise, you never know who can help you in this business, both personally and professionally. I can guarantee you'll have a lot of opportunities to create genuine relationships with those people and different coaches that you would have never met otherwise. And if you want to be a part of a community of coaches that's there to bounce ideas off of, help you, support you, then please, I think Rising Coaches is something that you'd be interested in. So if you think that this is something that you can benefit from, check out our website, risingcoaches.com/membership. It's only $120 a year, which is $10 a month to be a part of it. That's an annual fee. So we hope you consider being a part of our community of now over 800 coaches from high school to college, all the way up to NBA and professional basketball all over the world. For more information, the website's risingcoaches.com/membership. Well, let's go ahead and get started. Tim, what's up, man? I appreciate you being here with us, jumping on the podcast.
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, first ever live podcast in front of a studio audience, sort of, in front of a Zoom audience.
Nice. So,
appreciate you taking the time, man. How's everything been going during this craziness, the quarantine and coronavirus time?
Yeah, you know, obviously it's different for all of us. It's kind of the lifestyle that we're getting used to. A lot of Zoom meetings, a lot of FaceTime with our players. That's been the biggest thing is not being in the gym, not being able to get on campus with them and making sure they're doing their classwork. So we're also having to make sure they're doing all their classwork online and making sure they're turning it on time and make sure their grades are good and, you know, all those things that we all have to do, whether we're in high school or college, junior college, at all levels, we're trying to make sure our guys are good and they're healthy and then also making sure they're doing their schoolwork.
Are you guys doing anything unique during this period with your guys that other programs aren't? Obviously, everyone's doing the Zoom meeting, stuff like that.
Yeah, you know, one thing I've been doing with a couple of our guys, especially that played for us a lot and significant minutes this past year, because I coach the forwards. They don't like to be called big men anymore. They like to be called forwards. So they, you know, some of them like to be called small forwards, skilled forwards. But we do Zoom meetings where we share the screen, and then I'll go over their shots or their defensive possessions this year, their ball screen, you know, whether it's roll, pick and pop. We'll go over actions. So about, it's been once a week with three of our guys that are returning, we sit down and I don't do it for any more than 5 minutes though, because I know they're going to zone out quick.
Yeah, no question. It's always interesting to see like how people take advantage of, you know, the situation that they're in. So that's cool that you guys have been doing some film study. All right, Tim, tell us a little. Let's go back to like towards the beginning of your career. Obviously, you played at Winthrop, right?
I played at Tennessee Martin for Cal Luther, who was actually helped start Murray State, you know, to when they – I think the first NCAA tournament they went to was with Cal Luther as the head coach, if I'm not incorrect, or the second time they went to the tournament. So he's a okay. legend in Murray.
Yeah.
And went and played for him at Tennessee Martin. And then I was fortunate enough – I got a little bit of a different story. I played soccer and basketball. And so I played basketball at Tennessee Martin, transferred to Winthrop to do both, and then started playing soccer and then finished up just playing soccer at the end and coaching high school basketball at Northwestern High School in Rock Hill, South Carolina.
Really? So you played soccer. You were a really good soccer player, huh?
Yeah, I was.
It is different. Definitely a different path.
I was a better soccer player than I was a basketball player. You know,
yeah. Is
I was
there
a
any
basketball player?
Do you try to like when you teach your guys, you know, today? Do you use any of like your soccer background? Is there any overlap there? I know people do that a lot with like football and basketball.
Yeah. You know, some of the footwork stuff I think that helped me as a player was having really good footwork, just because I played that. You know, soccer. Obviously, you know, Akeem Olajuwon, Patrick Ewing played soccer. Some of the best bigs that had some of the best post moves ever. You know, they were soccer players. So I'm not going to sit there with a soccer ball and do some soccer work with guys in basketball, but you know, some of the footwork that I've been able, you know, as me as a now a coach can kind of show them just my coordination with my feet. It's kind of helped me with the coaching aspect of it.
Are you a big World Cup guy? You get into it and all that stuff.
Yeah. Big fan of that. That's about it. But I don't like, you know, every once in a while I watch it, but I don't have time to watch anything anyway.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so you finish up your career, and then do you coach high school for a year before you go to Guilford? What is it, Guilford
College? Yeah,
where's Guilford College?
I actually went to Austin Peay as a graduate assistant.
Okay,
so I was at I finished my degree and coached high school basketball, ninth grade basketball, and then helped out with varsity JV. And then I went to I was actually working Duke basketball camp, and one of the coaches there happened to be Brad Luce, who was last at the Missouri, he was at Missouri on staff there. And now he's still there in the athletic department. He couldn't stay on as the graduate assistant at Austin Peay because they have anti-nepotism laws in Tennessee. We were literally just talking at camp and he was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to be a grad assistant. And he's like, really? He's like, well, I just found out this week that I can't work for my dad as a GA. And so he was going to Central Missouri, you know, where they won a national championship. And so he was like, hey man, call my dad. I called his dad and interviewed, and I was there for 9 months as a graduate assistant. Ended up going, it was 23-8 and losing the first round of the NCAA tournament. So won OVC regular season and tournament. That was 02-03.
Nice. Yeah, it's amazing how many people their first shot comes from camp. Comes from working some connection.
Yeah. And that was the neat thing, though, in camps then. I remember there was Division I assistant coaches working camps.
Right.
Like, you'd be at a Duke camp or a Tennessee or, you know, whatever, North Carolina, and there'd be Division I assistants working those camps. And that's where you formed a lot of your relationships.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So after your GA spot there, then you get the D3 job, is that right?
I did, at Guilford College in North Carolina. Worked for Tom Palumbo, who's still there. That was his first year. Butch Estes had just left and gone to Miami-Dade, who's now at Barry. And he had left, and then I went with Tom Palumbo. It's crazy. He called the Duke basketball office and was looking for an assistant. Just called a couple of the, you know, D1 schools, like, hey, any young guys you know of. Well, the secretary happened to be a friend of mine. So she calls me, and she's like, I recommended you. And then I got in touch with him. And it was me and three others that interviewed. It was literally, I interviewed with him and then with the entire team because school had already started. So I wouldn't even, honestly, I was going to stay at Winthrop and get my MBA and just work on my MBA after getting my graduate degree in sports administration.
That Duke camp was good to you.
Yeah, it was really good to me. You know, it was great to me. Helped me get a lot of places. So,
yeah.
Interviewed for that, and I happened to be the younger guy on staff. The guys really liked that. and I related with them really well, and you know, ended up going there for a year.
Did you always want to get like back to the Division I level, or did level not matter to you? Like,
yeah, you know, it's crazy as a young guy when you were at Division I, that's all you know, and you sit there and it, even as a high school player, you sit there, I only want to play D1. Then when you're Division II or Division III assistant or NAIA or junior college, you're getting mad at these kids. Like, guys, this is an opportunity.
Right.
You don't understand how good the players are at these levels. Like, I was in the ODAC, that first team all conference, they were Division I players, every one of them.
For sure.
It wasn't even close. But I wanted to try and get back. You know, obviously that was the goal. So
what were you doing that year at Guilford to try to jump back to the Division I level?
Yeah, the biggest thing is just reaching out to all the coaches I'd met, when there was working camp and I'd gone to Final Fours and kind of connected through that. Coaches I already knew that were assistant coaches. Like, it was Dustin Kearns, Matt McMahon. You know, those are just two guys I can think of that I knew really well then, that I really took advantage of getting to know them. And when they go to the Final Four, I'd hang out with them and get to meet more coaches and just network. Just kind of like you guys have done at Rising Coaches.
You were just diligent about maintaining your relationships and staying in touch.
Yeah. You know, always sending letters at the beginning of the season, holidays, if they got a big win. You know I don't send letters as much as I used to.
You were a big letter guy, though.
I was. Yeah. Now it's more just a quick text, because most people just look at that and they're like, all right.
Right.
The letter's nice, but, you know.
For sure.
When you get a little older, you're just like, here you go. It's not that you don't think less of someone, but it's just an easier way to communicate.
Yeah, no question. So tell me about your first, like, let's skip ahead a little bit. When did you get your, like, first break to get, like, your Division I assistant job?
Yeah, I was the ops guy at Winthrop University in 07, 08 for Randy Peel. I worked for him then. And then I interviewed for a job with Mike Jarvis when he had just gotten Florida Atlantic. And I got fortunate because he had been out of the business 2 or 3 years. So he had kind of lost track, and he wasn't paying those assistants a whole lot of money. So a lot of the guys with experience turned it down because they weren't going to live in Boca Raton, Florida for $30,000. It gets you
nothing. What does $30,000 get you in Boca?
I didn't live in Boca the whole time I lived there, so I didn't get anywhere near Boca.
You wouldn't know.
Yeah. I lived outside of Boca about 15 minutes, and I actually had a baseball coach. It was really a one-bedroom apartment with, like, a little – it was like a study. And he lived in there, and that's the only way I could afford it.
And so did you know Jarvis beforehand? Or
I knew his son a little bit. Just obviously we talked about Duke camp, working that, and I got to know him a little bit through that. And then it's crazy. When the Black Coaches Association was still going on, when I was interviewing for the job, he was in Indy up there for that because he was one of the guest speakers. Well, one of the women's assistants at Winthrop, she was up there. He went up and asked her about me. And, you know, and that was one of the reasons, not the reason that I got the job, but just kind of asked about me, what kind of person I was, all those, you know, things, how I treated people. And, you know, that's the one thing it taught me is, hey, man, everyone at any level can help you or hurt you. And just how you got to treat people is treat them well.
For sure. Yeah, that's one thing I feel like I never did a great job of, is even like networking with people at your own school, you know, or even just across the hall on the women's side. Like, you're around them every day, and there's so much turnover in athletics, and they're going to go work somewhere else, and you may need their help at some point.
Yeah, no, it's crazy how many people have either reached out to me or I've reached out to them with just, you know, and it could be at some point people get back into high school coaching or going back into junior college or prep school. And it'll be someone you knew from another school you were at, and you'll be like, and then you'll have that connection.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so you get that assistant job with Mike Jarvis at FAU. How long were you there? You were there for
I was
a
there
while.
6 years.
6 years? Yeah.
Yeah, 6 years.
You guys
years.
Won the league 1 year, right? Went to the tournament?
Yeah, we won the league in 2011, our third year. Lost in the tournament, but played in the NIT. First time they've ever played in a postseason NIT. First time they've ever won a league regular season championship.
Yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yeah, so and then a lot of good things there.
Yeah. And then you went from there to Georgia Southern, and I think you were only there for a little while before you got to Murray, right?
Yeah, I was only there 1 year.
1 year, and then Mac McMahon got the job.
Yep. Yeah, Coach McMahon got the job at Murray. I was at Georgia Southern for that year. I loved my time there. Coach Byington, who's now at James Madison, you know, did a great job. We ended up going, I think it was 22-11, finishing in second. We set basketball back in our championship game. I think the final score, if I'm correct, was 38-36.
Oh, wow.
In the championship game. I mean, it was brutal, and we lost at the last second, you know, in the last couple seconds, had a shot to win it and miss.
38-36?
Yeah, it was brutal. That's why Jay Billis and all those rules changed, because of a game like that. I mean, it was just, you know, we played switching man-to-man, and they played the hybrid zone.
Right.
And it was just like every guy was scared to make a shot.
That's rough.
And there was probably – I'm going to be nice about this. Maybe 100 people in the gym.
Yeah.
Because it was in New Orleans. And you had Georgia State against Georgia Southern in New Orleans. So you add that to the 38-36 game. Wasn't exactly exciting TV.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. But, I mean, we had a heck of a year. Coach did a great job, obviously. That's why I got James Madison.
Sure.
But then going on Murray, this will be year number 6 coming up.
Okay, so – you and Mac McMahon go way back, right? Like, where did your relationship begin?
Kindergarten.
So you guys grew up together.
Yeah, we grew up together. Yeah, it's crazy.
Best friends the whole time, or just friends? You got closer or whatever?
Yeah, for the most part, we were best friends the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, he likes to tell the story because we were in the same grade at one time, and then I got held back. So he likes to tell a little funny story they told at his wedding. You know, I won't mention it here.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
Yeah, but I ended up getting held back, and then so he was a grade ahead of me. So he graduated 1 year ahead of me. But I mean, we grew up together. I'd be at his house, he'd be at my house. My mom would be cussing at him just like he was one of her own. So I mean, you know, she called him her son. I mean, it was just. So I have three other brothers, and my youngest brother and him are really good friends too.
So he's family to you, and has been for a long time.
Yeah.
And so did you guys talk about the whole time, like coming through the coaching profession, like, man, if I ever get a head job, I'm going to hire you. Like, did you guys have those conversations all the time?
That's the crazy. My wife used to get mad at me. She's like, when are you going to talk about this? And I was like, man, we just kind of an understanding. You know, we would talk about just like, hey, man, if we were involved with a job, like the year before the App State thing happened with him, which I'll talk about in a sec. I interviewed for Newberry in South Carolina, obviously Division II. He was Division I. I wasn't bringing him with me or anything like that. But then we just kind of talked about, oh, man, if you get a Division I job, you know, that would be really big for your experience being a head coach. And, you know, we talked about that. But when he was going to get – we thought he might get the Appalachian State job when Buzz Peterson went to Wilmington.
Mm-hmm.
So he called me and he's like, be ready. You know, I was going to leave Florida Atlantic for the mountains. I was a little – you know, I didn't want to leave Boca for the mountains. I was a little nervous about that. I hadn't gotten used to winter. I had been away from winter for about 4 years. But, you know, we had talked about that. Obviously, he didn't get it, which worked out pretty well, getting Murray State a few years later.
No doubt. No doubt. So as soon as he got the job, did you have to hit him up and be like, hey, congrats? And, like, or did he call you right away? Or he kind of let you know as it was happening?
Yeah, he called me and let me know. He goes, don't worry. He was just like, I'll give you a call in a few days. And the thing is, we talked every day.
Right.
And that's why it's funny. Larry Dixon, who's now at South Florida, and Andrew Wilson, who went to James Madison with Coach. They both came to my office, and they're like, see you later, buddy. Like right when he got the job, they're like, see ya, you're gone. I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, dude, you're gone. You talk to him every day.
Yeah.
And so even Mark came to my office, like, are you leaving? And I was like, I don't know yet.
Right.
So it became like kind of a running joke there because for like 5 days, I hadn't talked to Coach McMahon just because he was trying to keep this. He was trying to find the staff. And then obviously he was trying to keep the recruits in place and the current players. And his situation, he was at La Tech at the time when it happened. You know, a lot of people don't know that. He had left Murray for like 3 weeks.
Oh, he was going to go be an assistant down there?
Oh, he was already there. He had signed the paperwork.
Yeah.
He hadn't moved his family yet, but he was there for like 3 weeks with Eric Conkle. And so then Prome got Iowa State, and then everything just kind of flipped around 3 weeks later.
Oh, wow. What a crazy, crazy time that must have been for him and his family.
Oh, and it's like we talk about with rising coaches, like there is no clear path. You have no clue.
Right.
You know, you just work as hard as you can, network as much as you can, be good to people. be great to your kids, really try to help them grow and improve, and then hopefully you get your chance.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. All right, let's talk about like working for your best friend, like, because I'm sure up until that point, like, it's always just fun and games and joking around and like, yeah, it's gonna be awesome, we're gonna be working together. Was that a weird adjustment? Like, how do you go from being best friends to now being like his employee?
You know, it wasn't as bad, to be honest with you, because we grew up together competing against each other, playing, you know, together, to where we could say some things to each other every once in a while that we're used to it, you know, whereas kind of your brothers, someone's close enough to you, you can kind of tell each other like, hey man, this is what needs to be done. And we're always open and honest with each other. For me, I was just like, the one thing I wanted to make sure on our staff was like, guys, I'm just an assistant coach. Like, our me being his best friend has nothing to do with anything now that I'm here. So I really tried to make sure, like, man, I'm part of the staff. There is no difference between me and you. Yeah, I've known him longer, but that doesn't matter. And I've really tried to make that a point since I've been there. Of, hey, man, I'm just one of the coaches on staff. There is no difference between me and anyone else who's on staff, whether that's a GA, whether that's a secretary, it doesn't matter.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the Murray job. For people that don't know, like, don't go into full sales pitch mode on me, but tell me a little bit about like how Murray is different than most mid-majors.
Yeah, I mean, it is different. It's the community. Anyone that's been to a game, I mean, you just see how invested they are in the team. But it's not just that. It's when these guys are walking around campus, when they're in the restaurants, when they're at Walmart, whatever, people are asking for autographs. They're asking for pictures. You know, it's like Coach McMahon, him and James Kane, who was on staff at the time, both were like texting me, and it was summertime, and you know, they're just telling me, they're like, dude, this is like Duke and Carolina, but in Murray, Kentucky. Obviously it's a smaller scale, and they're right. You know, that's the biggest difference, is the investment the community makes. And, you know, last year, obviously you could see when we play on national TV, and even this year in the championship game, we have like 7,000 people at the games that are 2 hours away. And obviously you were at SEMO, and that's like a 2 hour ride. I mean, we'd have 1,000 people at the game.
Yeah, you get more people at our game than we would.
Yeah, and that's the difference. It's just the investment in the community. And the crazy part is you'll be at a game, there'll be 3-4 generations of families right behind you. I mean, you see great-grandkids, grandkids, the parents, you know, the grandparents. Like, that's how invested they are in, you know, in the program. The one thing is, obviously, there's high expectations with that as well.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. So how many banners – that's what stuck out to me. Like, the first time I went in your gym, first of all, I was expecting this beautiful arena. It's kind of an old, I mean, it's big, but it's an older gym. There's nothing like crazy about it. Yeah. But you look up in the rafters. When I was there, I seem to remember like counting 32 championships. Yeah. Is that, do you know the exact number or no?
Well, that's with the conference championship, you know, regular season and postseason. Like, we've been at 17 NCAA tournaments. I mean, you think about that.
Elite.
We were at Auburn last year, two years ago when Ja was there, when it was Ja and Shaq Buchanan, that team, those guys. They've been in the tournament at that point 5 times.
Yeah, how about that?
Like, I looked up in the banners and I looked and I was like, man, they've only been to the tournament 5 times. Like, you don't expect that. Obviously, they just made a Final Four last year, and Bruce Pearl's doing a great job, but you kind of you forget about that. Like, we've been to the NCAA tournament more than most high majors.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Like, you guys aren't getting at large bids most years.
Mm-mm.
You know, no, we had to win the tournament. Yeah.
And that's not to include some of those tournament games like this year where we lost on the last possession.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, there's a couple, you know, there's probably 4 or 5 of those in the history of the school that has lost in the last possession or two that could have added to that.
For sure.
Yeah.
And so – obviously, you got it rolling now, and you guys made 2 straight NCAA tournaments, advanced to the second round in 18-19, and then, you know, we're on track to having – I mean, did have a great year until it got cut short due to coronavirus this year. But the first 2 years weren't like that, and with those, like, crazy expectations in Murray, Kentucky, like, how was that? Because year one, you guys go 17-14, which is fine, you know, 17 wins. But at Murray State, 17 wins probably isn't cutting it. And then year two, you guys go 16-17, thanks to SEMO sweeping you guys for the first time in our school history. So yeah. But how were those first 2 years? I mean, I remember talking to you and James and you guys were acting like you were going to get fired.
Yeah. You feel like that. I'll never forget. We lost an exhibition game. We had a kid got a serious injury, which I can't really talk about because medical stuff, but he was seriously, it was a serious issue. So Coach McMahon wasn't even at practice before our first exhibition game, for 2 days, because he was with our player, and we lose the exhibition game at the buzzer. Well, I'll never forget. I knew the guy was going to say something to me. I'm at the post office and I have my earbuds in and I'm just trying to act kind of be to myself. And I take him out after I get off a phone call. And this guy just comes up to me. He's like, "Coach, that's not acceptable here in Murray, Kentucky." He's like, "We don't lose games like that." And then, me being a smart ass, I had to come back with just like, yeah, Michigan State last year lost this, in the exhibition game. They made a Final Four. Syracuse, same thing. Just had to be like, it's not the end of the world. We'll learn from it. A lot of things going on. We'll be all right. And, but it was tough with those expectations. I felt that first year we exceeded the expectations I had, to be honest with you. Because that roster, the starting five, we returned one guy from that, which was Jeffrey Moss, who was a very good player. But then we had Wayne Langston, who was the third, fourth big on that team. And then it was basically a whole new team after that. And I really felt like we excelled with that team. The expectation, the fans were okay that year. Now, obviously, the next year, they weren't real happy because there had been 29 years in a row without a losing season. And, that weighed on the staff, the players, You're not blind to that. You know what's going on. And then, same thing, I'm in Kroger's and a guy comes up to me just telling me how it's unacceptable. We can't have a losing record here at Murray State. That doesn't happen. But those 2 years were honestly great for us because they really helped, obviously, Coach McMahon and his change, not change, but help cement his philosophy and the things he wanted to do and how he wanted the program to be and the guys that he wanted in the program. Obviously, we had a great recruiting class with Ja Morant, Shaq Buchanan, Anthony Smith, Tevin Brown. Tevin and Anthony were on the team this year, and Tevin was first-team all-conference. He'll be back as a junior next year. But it really cemented the recruiting and building the relationships with the kids and making sure we knew exactly who was coming into the program. I think sometimes, especially it's going to be hard in these times with the quarantine times, of building a true relationship and getting to know what the kid is about. And that's our biggest thing that we've done in our recruiting is if there's any questions about the kid that he doesn't compete, he doesn't love ball, we'll stop recruiting him.
Was it like that when you first got in there, or is that a change that happened after the first 2 years?
That was the expectation that you wanted that, but at times you missed out on that. And didn't get some guys, obviously, that we ended up getting. It wasn't like that with some of those guys. And so we just kind of made sure, Coach always talks about weed the garden. And that doesn't mean cutting players. That just means weeding the garden, making sure if there's anything that's out of place, we make sure it's good. And that's even with guys, because we returned that next year, Jonathan Stark and Terrell Miller, who were on that 16-17 team, who were our two best players on that team, but they really bought into, the changes that need to be made and did a really good job. And Coach did an unbelievable job turning the program back around, which we knew was going to take a year or two when he got the job because the roster just wasn't where it was previously.
Coach McMahon spoke at our conference maybe 2-3 years ago about that shift in culture after year two. What were some of the things you guys did off the court to kind of get the culture right?
Yeah, we did a lot of roster. Yeah, we were always invested in the guys, but we even dove in even more and being invested in them as much as we could. Coach brought us in as coaches, and in all honesty, that summer we had to reevaluate ourselves and the things we were doing. And he always talks about it, and that's what makes him a great leader. He's not, and he says it to the players, "I'm not just talking to you; I'm talking to myself." And that was a big thing that really helped all of us. Kind of, we always talk about alignment, and we need to just get our team and the program back in alignment and, being in the same alignment. We always talk about it. Guys, if you're driving a car and one wheel's out of alignment, that thing can end up in a ditch if you let the steering wheel go. And so we really did a good job of really getting everyone on the same page. And Coach would bring guys together, you know, 21 ways to be a great teammate, that book. We read that as a team that summer together. Really broke the book down, met every Sunday and discussed it. And Coach did it in short, you know, maybe, and it's a short book anyway, and it's an easy read, but maybe two or three points of being a great teammate, and we would break that down and what it means and where we need to go to.
Let's go back to the recruiting piece. And we were talking about this earlier today, like to live up to those Murray State expectations, you need borderline high major players, right?
Yeah. No, you and, do. If you don't, you're getting fired.
Right. And now you're saying, like, you know, after year two, like, you guys are being more strict on, we need to make sure we have great kids. So borderline high major players that are great kids are usually high major players or, like, yeah, you know, close to it. So, like, how – and you really can't afford to make too many mistakes there, you know, again, because of the high level of expectation.
Yeah.
Like, how the hell are you signing any players that are good enough and dealing with
that? You know, it's funny because we were talking about it for this year's class, and Coach was, like, explaining what he wanted out of his four-man. And we were like, you just explained LeBron James. Like, you know, or just kind of laughing about it. But right. No, the big thing is with that, with the recruiting, man, we just really invested in time and more time and getting to know everyone around them. And what we changed a little bit too was, and we did a little bit at the beginning, is every coach spoke to that recruit and got to know them and kind of got to know their circle to where we felt like the whole staff knew them and we recruited them longer. Because you know, in those first two classes, especially the first year, we had to sign some of those guys late. And so you didn't get to know them as well as you wanted to and kind of had to bring them in the program and have players. So we, not to say every once in a while in the spring or even in the fall, you don't recruit a guy as long as some of these other guys. But like this recruiting class we brought in this year, I mean, the four guys that we signed early, we had been recruiting for, you know, some of them 2-3 years. And really had a good relationship with him. And our thing is, and we always talk about it, is, and Coach's biggest goal since he got there was, we are going to develop players here at Murray State. That is our goal. You know, some of these guys, like whether it was a Tevin Brown, a John Morant, you know, Cameron Payne was another guy who came in. And obviously Coach McMahon was on that staff, who was 165 pounds and grew to be 185, 6'3". And we really try to invest in the weight room and the player development. That's the biggest thing. We really want to show them the way we want to do things and how we're going to do it and those guys that buy in. And it's gotten easier now with the program just because of the groundwork that like a Jonathan Stark built. I mean, I'll never forget after we played you guys his senior year, I think he had 34 points. We're in the office at 10 o'clock getting ready for the next game, which was Tennessee Martin. I believe that was our partner. He's in the gym getting shots up. And he really set that tone of, this is the way this program's going to be. Then John Shatt carried that on. And then this year, Anthony Smith, Tevin Brown, they really kept that up. Of, here's what we're going to do. Here's our expectations. We're going to live in the gym. And we got guys on our program that if you're not in the gym, that's not acceptable to them as a team. And it's really that player buy-in that I think Coach McMahon has done such a great job. Of we've gotten, you have to get fortunate in recruiting. Let's be honest. Didn't think John Morant was going to be number 2 pick in the NBA draft and rookie of the year. We thought he was really good, but he never knew he was going to end up being that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, and the thing that I thought you guys do a great job of is, yeah, maybe you might say it's a player led culture or whatever, but you guys allow them to be themselves and like your team legit looks like that. Now, of course, you guys win a lot, which helps. But it looks like your guys are having fun in the process. And you know how long the season is and, like, what a grind it is. And a lot of teams, you see it, like, going through warmups, like, oh, man, we could beat these guys tonight. Like, they don't look into it. But your guys are, like, fired up all the time. And, like, it looks like you guys allow them to have fun. And at the same time, you guys are, like, pretty very disciplined, very good defensively. Mm-hmm. You guys do a lot of the little things. Like, how do you guys – you know, manage that balance of discipline and still fun?
Yeah. No, obviously having good players helps. And like you said, when you're winning games, that helps a ton. You know, like the beginning this year, we were 4-4. It wasn't as much fun at the beginning of the year when you're losing those games. But Coach always preaches joy. He always talks about, like, guys, it's not, you know, you get to do this. It's not, I have to do this. That's our big thing in the program. You don't have to go to the gym and work out. You get to go to the gym and work out. It's a privilege to be here at Murray State for all of us. That's coaches, that's players, managers, trainers. I mean, Coach preaches that from the very beginning, and he continuously preaches it during the season and just talks about, you know, we want to enjoy this. And he always talks about us, like I just said, with weeding the garden. Us as coaches, when a guy has an issue or you can kind of sense it, and I think all of us as coaches, since that's something we can kind of sense when a guy has an issue. You can see it on their face. Today's generation doesn't hide it very well when they aren't, you know, happy. And we really make sure that we're making sure not just happy, but these guys are bought in and that they're enjoying themselves. And Coach always talks about it. You get one college career. That's it. Like we want to make this the best experience of their lives. And Coach preaches that. I mean, that's one of our core values. The last one is joy. And Coach preaches that to our guys and wants them to have fun. And like you said, practices are tough. They're intense. We get after it, you know, and during the games, and not just say practices aren't fun as well, but during games, he really wants to let the guys go and let them do their thing and show their personalities. I mean, I think that's one thing he's really good at is within a controlled environment, still letting them show their personalities, enjoy the game. Like, that's one thing I will say Coach changed too. He's like, there's certain guys I can't coach from those first 2 years. And I'm sure he spoke about that when he came and spoke with you guys. He knows guys that enjoy ball, that love it. Those are the guys he wants. And obviously it's not easy to get those guys, but we've been very fortunate to get guys like that, that just love ball and love to be in the gym. And it's just worked out well for us. And those guys, they let it shine. I mean, like I can say this year, guys that we've had, we had to bring them in and be like, man, are you having fun? Like, we're winning. Like, enjoy this. Like, this is, like, you get an unbelievable experience. You're playing in front of 6,000 to 9,000 every night at home. Like, this is great. And sometimes you just have to help kids through that sometimes because they've got stuff going on as well at home or, you know, classwork they're struggling or their girlfriend or other things out, you know, other things that are going on in their lives. We just try to really make sure that they're in a good place mentally.
Well, what advice would you give to somebody who's, you know, trying to manage a player that, you know, you can tell something's off with them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is sitting down and talking with them. And I think outside the office, I mean, that's to us, I think we've done a good job is, you know, you just go talk to a kid. Maybe you go meet him in the cafeteria, you know, and you just have lunch with him or dinner or whatever, and just sit down with them away from people and just let them talk. I think that's been kind of the key as I've seen as I've gotten older. You know, me, I'm 42 now. I don't know if I'm a rising coach anymore. I'm just an old coach now. But, you know, you start to see it. These guys need an outlet more so than ever. You know, when I was playing, man, if I had a problem, I just kind of kept it to myself and moved on. To where these guys, they need to kind of let it out sometimes and talk to you. There's been guys that I've had in my past, whether it's been here or other places, that I've helped line up with a sports psychologist to help them as well. Because sometimes we aren't trained for some of the stuff that they might be going through. And I think just talking to these guys and letting them know you care about them, that's the biggest thing. They want to know that you care about them.
Okay. You guys, you mentioned John Morant. Mm-hmm. In his first year, you guys had two great seniors in Jonathan Starks and Terrell Miller. And they kind of were the leaders of that team, even though Ja was like really, really good. And it was clear. But then his sophomore year is when, like, the circus began. And you guys were on ESPN every single night. Like, that's hard for Kentucky to handle. Mm-hmm. Like, how did Murray State handle that and still go 28-5 and still win the conference and the conference tournament and all that?
You know, obviously a lot of credit goes to Coach McMahon. But, I mean, I think it goes to John, the players on the team. You know, that's the one thing you would think if, you know – a guy like John Morant's on TV every night and all they do is talk about him. And then our guys kind of get sprinkled in there a little bit, you know, when they hit a three or get a lob, you know, something like that. You think there might be some jealousy? There never was, because he didn't care about it. All he wanted to do was win. He loved being a great teammate. He was all about winning and he was bought into the team and bought into his teammates. He just did whatever he had to do to help us win. And that was set his freshman year. Obviously you said he was a really good player, but we had two studs who were seniors. And he kind of just was like, all right, this is my role. This is what I'm going to do. But I mean, it's funny. His dad even said, you know, I'll never forget. He goes, you're about to see the Sumter. You're about to see that Sumter come out now, you know, because he knew he could open his game up even more.
Sure. Yeah.
And that he was one of the top guys this year. And so, I mean, our guys were great because he was so invested in them and they were invested in him as well. And there was never, ever animosity whatsoever. Heck, I remember being at EIU and some kid came up and was like, hey, can I get your autograph? And I'll never forget one of our guys like, man, we'll just go eat on the bus so we can eat in peace. Like just messing with him, you know, just making a joke. And he didn't care. He thought it was funny.
Right.
So he never took himself too seriously with anything. It just, he was humble and you can see it in his interviews. You could see it during the year when they would interview on him and you see it now in the NBA. I mean, he just wants to play ball. He just loves ball, loves the hoop, and obviously he's really good at it.
Really good. I remember when I was at Clemson, we had Trevor Booker, who he was not the number two pick in the draft or anything, but he did have a almost 10-year career in the NBA. And once a week, he would do something in practice that we had never seen done on the basketball court before. I mean, was it like similar? I can just imagine like some of your practices, you know, like looking back and maybe like stealing a glance at Coach McMahon and being like, holy shit, did you see that? Like, was there a lot of moments like that?
Yeah, there were quite a few of those. I mean, he'd make passes sometimes, and you'd be like, how the hell did he make that, first of all? Like, how'd he get it there? And then sometimes the guys would drop it, so they'd never want to be yelling at them, like, hey, man, you got to have your hands ready on a swivel. But, I mean, he would get a steal in practice, like, and go do a 360 like it was nothing. And you wouldn't, like, after a while, you became numb to it. You're just like, oh, that's it. Okay, yeah. Nothing big, no big deal. Or he'd pin a shot up at the top of the backboard, come out of nowhere, and you'd just be like, holy crap. Like, you know, it's one of those, I'm glad we got that guy.
For sure.
He would do things, like you said, he just kind of looked at each other and the staff would just look and just kind of shake their heads like, wow.
Pretty good.
Yeah. The one thing he did, though, I will give him credit, man, he was one of the hardest working guys we had. So when you have a guy like that who's all world, setting the tone for, he's the guy leading the practice, him and Shaq Buchanan that year, they led the team. And, I mean, we start everything. The first 40 minutes for us is a little bit of skill work sprinkled in with a lot of defensive closeouts, shell drill. I mean, all kinds of drills that we're doing defensively, and he would lead the way with that.
He would get after it all the time.
Oh, man, loud, high energy, you know, and that's what coach always wants when we recruit guys. He's like, if a guy's not good on the phone, it's hard to get coach to recruit him. Just because he's right? Like, and he'll give a guy a chance. Obviously, he knows some of these kids are a little nervous or they just don't want to talk on the phone. But if it becomes an extended period of time, he's just like, man, I don't know if this guy even likes ball. Like, that's one thing that's helped in the recruiting process, because there's been a couple kids, he's like, guys, like, I know he's really good, but, like, I can just tell it's not going to work.
Right. All right, Tim, you mentioned it. You've been doing it now for a little while. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you're doing to help prepare yourself for the next step and get that head job, especially being at a place like Murray, which does have such a strong tradition of, you know, promoting from within?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest thing, and a lot of people use this lines, you know, think like a head coach as you're an assistant. And I felt like I've tried to do that for a while. I've been fortunate enough. I've interviewed for a couple head jobs. Even when I was younger, when I was at Newberry College, my head coach had gotten let go and I interviewed for that job. So that really helped change my mindset on that. But for me, it's just building relationships with our players. That's one thing you got to do. But this quarantine time has been unbelievable for me, of just watching coaching clinics, listening to different people, whether it's player development, you know, offense, defense, things they're going to do. And I've got a coaching philosophy that I've been working on since I was at Florida Atlantic that I kind of tweak every year after every season and make sure I have that ready, you know, if my chance does come to interview for jobs. And then just, you know, the one thing I've learned is now, especially at this level, is you better know an agent, you know, who's a coaching agent. Not to say you have to per se be with that agent, but you need to know a couple of them just in case you start to get opportunities that they can kind of help you through some of this stuff. And that's one thing I would say.
Yeah, talk a little bit more about that. Like, what do you you're not saying you need an agent. You just need to have one ready.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
negotiations or to help put you over the edge for a job?
I think to get you involved with some jobs, and because they know about some of them before they're going to happen. You know, for me, obviously, right now, it's it's easier for a high major assistant to get a low to mid-major head job. But, you know, it helps me just getting to know these agents, getting to know the landscape of what, you know, ADs are looking for certain jobs. You know, it's like a couple jobs open this year, not many, but I had talked to an agent and he was just like, well, this is what they're looking for. And, you know, I didn't fit it because I wasn't a former high major assistant. And so I kind of knew right away not to even try and get involved. But then, you know, this agent's opened my eyes of you need to get to know search firm people, you know, which to me, I was like, man, just do your job. Like that should be enough. Just being successful as a program and working for a head coach who's been successful, that should be enough. But there's a lot more to it, especially at the Division I level when it keeps going up and up. And obviously the money has gone up, so that increases a lot of things. And we don't know what's going to happen after this quarantine with a lot of, you know, college basketball and all college athletics. But before this happened, you know, I was always trying to talk to this agent that I know really well, that he kind of helps me through the process of, and he's also helped me. I've sent him my philosophy and I've sent him and he's helped me kind of, here's what you need to do, tweak this. This is what they're looking for this, you know, job. So he kind of gives you inside info so you can kind of gear it towards what the AD and administration want.
Tim, what advice would you give to coaches who are just trying to figure it out and navigate this profession?
Pray? No, I'm kidding. Nah, you know, the one thing, just, man, work hard. Enjoy it. Like, it's fun. Like, we get to coach basketball for a living. This is something I dreamed of when I was 5, 6 years old, like, shooting ball. Like, man, I get to teach someone and be a part of somebody's journey in basketball. And the big thing I would say, though, for young guys that are getting into it, and obviously I went from Division III, Division II, ops guy, Division I assistant, I think one of the best routes that you can do, and you did it as well, is junior college. I think it's unbelievable. I think you get your hands on everything. Just like in Division II, Division III, I got my hands on everything. And I mean, I did every job you can imagine. I mopped floors. You know, that was part of my job. You know, I didn't make popcorn, but it came close to that one game that we didn't have anyone there. So I was going to have to do that. To where the one thing that helps you in the junior college ranks is, and you really know this, is you build connections with a lot of coaches. Whereas when you're a Division II and Division III, and there is no knock, because I think those guys can coach their tails off at that level. I think they don't get enough credit. But if you want to really move up, and like we talked about, get to the Division I level, when you're a junior college assistant coach, you're getting the experience, plus you're connecting and you're building a network because you're meeting all these Division I, Division II, and some Division IIIs that look at junior college kids, obviously they have to have academics. You're going to meet all those guys. And they're going to be at your practices so they can see how you are and how you handle players and your relationships. Then they're going to come to you about your relationship with this player to try to recruit, you know, whatever athlete they're recruiting, to where it kind of gives you and it gives them a view of yourself and how you can help them in their program, whether they're an assistant and one day are going to be a head coach or they are currently a head coach at the Division II or Division I level. I just think if I had to do it all over again, I don't know if I could. I was fortunate enough to get the route I did because Randy Peel I knew already before at Winthrop and kind of got my foot in Division I. And that's kind of how, you know, I got my foot in that door. And even at Newberry College, Sean Golden, he was assistant at Winthrop. So I knew him from that. And that's kind of, it was all connections that I had previously. And two of them were obviously from Winthrop. And then obviously with the Jarvis connection. But I think working junior college prep school, I think is a really good option as well. I think you get to know all these coaches. You're working with young men. You're helping them with their academics. Not all of them. Some are already there. But you're helping them with their academic side. But you get to meet so many coaches doing those two right there, I think are invaluable levels if you want to keep moving up at a quicker rate. Whereas not to say Division II and Division III guys can't jump up. And you know, but I just feel like your network grows quicker at those two levels.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with you in there. I had a great experience at that level. Well, Tim, I appreciate it. Right now, what I want to do is go ahead and open it up for questions. And I know we have one here from David Bentley. Yeah. David, go ahead, buddy.
Okay.
What's going on?
I have a question. So, obviously, an assistant that's kind of getting ready to hopefully be a head coach one day, when you get ready to hire a staff, are you, maybe from your perspective or just in general, are you hiring guys that you know, or are you going to guys that you trust where you might not know the person, but you know, like, hey, this guy speaks highly or this guy did a heck of a job for him. I don't have a personal connection with him.
Yeah.
I guess, does that question make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Yeah. I mean, I think at first I want to try and get the guys I already know, because I feel like I have a relationship with them and that, you know, we can be honest with each other, you know, because at the end of the day, within a program, you guys, and we talk about it all the time, you have to be in alignment. That's staff, that's the players, but especially the staff. You have to be in alignment, because as a head, as an assistant coach, I've learned so much stuff of what to do and even what not to do sometimes. And you learn kind of those things. And then the next step is, if I've got the guys that I know, but I say I can't get a guy, he wants to stay where he's at, or he's a head coach somewhere already, like a Division II or Division III, and he's happy where he's at, then I'll lean on the guys I know that really trust, that I trust, that know guys. But I think that's kind of how it goes. At least for me, that's how it will go if I'm fortunate enough to get the option to be a Division I head coach, or Division II or Division III.
Sure. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Hey, Tim, maybe you can give us some book or podcast recommendations. What have you been doing during this quarantine? Anything recently or just in general that's made an impact on you?
Yeah, the Coach's Clinic online. Sorry if you can hear my kids crying. I think they're fighting out there. You know, going on that every night and trying to watch something. I've been really studying right now. I'm going to start studying Gonzaga and their offense and their continuity ball screen. Just something that I just kind of was like, man, I want to watch and see what they do. And I'm fortunate enough, one of their guys on staff worked with me at Florida Atlantic. So I basically told him, hey, man, I'm going to watch hours and hours upon film. Now I want to call you and just kind of pick your brain. So, but books, I haven't read as many books as I should right now. I've just been more watching all these videos, just trying to learn some little things that we can add to our program. And I work with the forwards, like I talked about earlier. And I want to see things that fit within what we do, but that I can add little tweaks to what we do. And so I've really been taking notes at that every night. I mean, I stay up. Anyone knows me, and every once in a while I'll text guys at like 2 a.m. and they're like, what are you doing? I go to sleep. And I'm like, man, my kids are up, and I got to help teach first grade as well as do my job. So I got to do that stuff later at night.
Hey, Tim, we got a question here from Sean. Okay. Go ahead, Sean.
What's up? Yep. What are you doing?
What's going on, man?
And recruiting John Morant, how was that process since you had a guy like that?
Yeah.
That you're recruiting now and the difference of that, that's got to be, you know,
wait, yeah.
Are you still keeping in contact with him and that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the crazy thing is Ja is such a grounded person. It's crazy. We had 4 visits this fall, all 4 committed and signed. So the Ja Morant effect is real. Like, it's real. But he was back every time he came back. He didn't come back because we asked him to.
Yeah.
He just, like, literally we're at a football game and we had a visit. And he walks up and we're like, Ja, what are you doing here? Like, you know, he just turned 20. He was 19 up until August.
I saw you guys playing Hartford.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great last year, yeah.
Yeah, and you could see how his connection with his teammates, like, it wasn't about him ever.
Dude, put a show on.
And he did it with his teammates and made them better, and he makes everyone better around him. Definitely. And it was 7 out of 8 weeks this fall. He was back in Murray, just hanging out with his boys, just hanging out with his friends, and then he'd come and play pickup, you know, with our guys. Not every night, you know. Sometimes he'd watch, but other times he'd come and play. Because he was coming off that little knee. He had a minor knee, like, scope or something he had done. So near the end, he came and played a couple times before they started preseason. But, I mean, he was there every time. I mean.
Hey, good luck.
No, thank you. Thank you. And recruiting him, and it was crazy. You know, James Kane, he has the story out there how he saw him in the back gym and told Coach, he's like, dude, this dude's a pro. Like, we need to recruit him. And then Coach went the next day. Coach changed his plans, drove to South Carolina, saw him. And we literally had a talk. But the whole staff was just like, this is the dude we got to get. And recruited him. He came on campus. And, you know, we had gotten Shaq Buchanan, who was a really good player, who's now with the Memphis Hustle. He committed basically that Wednesday on the phone before even visiting. And then Ja and him were on the same visit. And he ended up, you know, telling Ja, like, man, this is a place we need to be together. And it kind of worked out like that. So, I mean, it's great, you know.
Great resume for you, too, and the coaching staff.
Oh, man, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Great. And the crazy part is Ja's in our group chat more now than he was even when he was playing.
That's funny.
It's amazing. He's on that group chat all the time. Like, today he's in there texting about something. Like, he just loves being part of the team. And all these guys are his former teammates, most of them.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Coach.
Yeah.
We got another question here from Travis. Go ahead, Travis.
Coach, you talked a lot about building relationships, writing letters, sending text messages, those type of things. A lot of times you get lost, like putting a name with a face, building genuine relationships. How would you go about building tips for building genuine relationships?
Yeah, I think the one thing is, and like I talked about, that helps like with the junior college guys, is you get to see each other face to face. As much as, you know, this has changed the world where we're Zooming and doing all that stuff, and this is great because we can see each other face to face. So next time we hopefully meet, we're like, oh yeah, you know, Coach Lewis, how are you, man? Yeah, I remember we did that Zoom chat, so we can actually have face to face and see who you are. I think that's it. The one thing I will say I struggled as an assistant, and it's probably my wife tells me sometimes, one, you need to be out there more. You need to be networking more, doing all that. But you got a job to do too. And you're like, man, well, I got to get my job done first before I start worrying about trying to meet somebody. And we all know somebody right here. There's someone you know that you're just like, man, that dude's not sincere when he's trying to network with me. Like, there's just a feeling you get with certain people. You're like, man, that dude doesn't care about, like, he just wants to move up the ladder. You don't feel like he actually genuinely cares to actually get to know you. I think you just got to spend time with people and just get to know them. It sounds simple, and it is, but, like, I think there's times, man, I just go in my corner and just do my thing and coach, and I'm like, I probably should be over here talking to these coaches, like, networking more and doing that, whether you're on the road. But you're on the road recruiting, you're like, man, I got a job. I'm getting paid to get players. That's what we're here to do and to evaluate. So, I mean, there's a fine line with it. But I think when you're out, man, just getting to know people, and which sucked for a lot of coaches this year, especially being in Atlanta and, you know, I'm in the Southeast, is that's a huge way to meet people. And you get to sit down, you have dinner with them. Like, Coach Friesman, I met him in Arizona. We had dinner. You know, we just sat down and had burgers and probably maybe a beer and just hung out, and everyone just talked and got to know each other. And there was no pretenses of like, well, I'm at this school, you're at this school. I think that's the one thing I don't like about this profession sometimes, is guys will move up and then they act like they don't know you anymore.
Yeah.
And I've had that happen to me, and I hope I don't ever do that to somebody, because I've been Division II, Division III. I've been a high school coach. Like, man, we're all coaching basketball. We ain't curing cancer. We aren't curing COVID-19 either. Like, we're not that important, you know. I think we need to value ourselves. Yeah, it's great what we get to do for these young people and change lives, and that's why I do it, because I had a coach who changed my life. It made me go in the right direction when I probably could have gone the wrong direction. And obviously, it's a game you love and you fell in love with when you were younger. But, I mean, that's a long answer. But I think genuinely just getting to know people and calling them and talking to them. Yeah, you know, during the season it's tough. It's easier just to text the guy, hey, man, hope you're well. You know, look up on their website how they're doing. Just be like, hey, good win yesterday. I think you genuinely feel like, all right, they actually give two pieces of you know what about me.
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
All right, we got another one. I don't know if I should allow this question from Cody Cohen. This is like insider trading.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Cody.
What you got, Code?
What's up, Coach? You worked with a lot of high-level guys, but specifically with forwards at multiple spots. What's something you look for when you're either recruiting bigs or you're putting together a player development plan for them?
Yeah. When you're looking for them and you're recruiting, I mean, one, you got to have good hands. I just think, you know, guys that don't have good hands, there's some players out there, you're like, man, that kid's not bad. He can run, he can jump, and then you get him in a game and he stinks. And, you know, we always talk about the all-airport team. He looks great, but he's not a very good player. I think you see if the instincts are there, the athletic ability. Do they have good footwork? Do they have good hands? And the best thing for all kids now is, do they play hard? That's the skill. If a kid plays hard, and, yeah, he might not be where he's supposed to be right now, but he can get there if he just plays hard and he competes. That's the biggest thing for me is when I'm on the road, if I see a guy and he don't compete, he dogs it, and you can tell he's a terrible teammate, I just mark them off, and I might write some explicitives in my notes about them, you know, that kid, because I do all my notes in my phone, so I have them saved for life in there about each kid, and I'll just put kind of that evaluation. And then when we're doing breakdown for player development, obviously everything you do, there's some things you get to do that you want to add, but obviously you have to do it within the structure of what your head coach wants. And, you know, it's funny, Coach today was on a NABC championship steal, and he talked about player development and isn't putting a guy with blindfold and three balls dribbling and doing all that stuff. And he's right. It's doing the stuff that you guys are going to do repeatedly that helps them be successful. And I think that's what we really try to do at Murray State is, yeah, you know, we're going to do some stuff to add to their game, but we're really going to work on all the core pieces and the offense, how they're going to score for us defensively, how we want them to rebound, how we want them to, you know, pivot, all those different things that we're going to work on with our bigs, that we just try to work on what's within the framework of what we do. And then in the summertime, you can add some stuff, you know, for guys that, you know, every big wants to shoot threes. It doesn't matter who they are, even if they can't even shoot at all. But you try to throw them a bone, so at the end of a workout, you let them shoot a couple threes. You know, I think you always have to try to make sure. And what I've done is when I meet with guys, I kind of ask them, what's their goal? Like, where do they want to be so that they're invested in the program as well? I think if it's just you teaching them and talking to them all the time, they're not going to do it. You got to make sure they're invested in it.
Tim, thanks again, man. Appreciate you spending the afternoon with us. That was great.
No, I appreciate you. Appreciate all the guys that were here, man. I'll put in the chat, I'll put my email and my phone number. So anything you need, man, just reach out to me. I promise I'll get back to you. Sometimes I don't right away. I got a 7- and a 4-year-old. And I'm teaching first grade, so it's not that I'm ignoring you. I'm just trying to make sure my 4-year or my 7-year-old can read.
You want to add second grade and kindergarten? I'll send them to you.
Oof. Nah, I'm good. I'm glad I have the 4-year-old. My wife takes that, the drawing, and like trying to do ABCs. I'm good with that. That's more my level. Obviously, I did first grade twice, so I mean, I should be good at it.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Just a quick reminder to write us a review and follow along with what we are doing at risingcoaches.com.